Yeah, my name is Sara Tonelli, and I am the head of the Digital Humanities Group at Fondazione Bruno Kessler in Trento. And we are mainly focused on using text processing techniques for the digital humanities domain, and we've worked with Cartolar Heritage data. And what I'm going to present today is a work led by a PhD student in my group, Matteo Lorenzini, that I co-supervised with Marco Rospocker from University of Verona. And this is an attempt to use a natural language processing technique to assess quality of metadata in cultural heritage records. I mentioned metadata, but actually looking at existing literature, there isn't a single definition of what metadata quality is. It has been defined intuitively as a fitness for use, so meaning that metadata in a record are of high quality if they can be used for the purpose they were meant for by the community that is targeted by a collection. So it's just an operational definition. But then there have been several works trying to decompose the concept of metadata quality into different dimensions that should all be taken into account to assess the quality of the record. Again, there are several proposals. So the parameters are the dimensions that can be used to define quality, whereas the metrics are somehow the methods to assess them, to measure them. So the operationalization of the parameters. And as you can see in this brief summary of existing works, and maybe I'm missing also some of them, there are several parameters range from 7 to more than 20, and also the methods paper proposed more than 40 metrics to measure metadata quality. Examples of parameters are, for example, completeness, conformance to expectations, logical consistency, accessibility. So these are these high-level concepts that we expect to find when we look at metadata. We started, as I said, this is a work, an ongoing work that started around 2 years ago. We started from the dimensions that are probably easier to measure. So, for example, the completeness. In this case, the completeness can be seen as the number of field elements in a record with respect to a metadata profile. So a profile defines what should be found in a cultural heritage record. And if I find all the mandatory items there or all the recommended ones, then I can measure how complete a record is. And we did some work also to try to build profiles for collections, for example, starting from completeness. This is an example. This is a data set describing the records from Regione Marche. And here you can see on the x-axis the different items that you can find in a record and the percentage of items that have some field information. So in this case, we just look for, we just check whether an item is empty or not. And comparing different profiles for different collections, you can see just looking at this kind of graphical representation, which collection has on average more field records and therefore a more complete description. You can also decompose the completeness and the items in specific groups. For example, usually in metadata profile, you have some items that are mandatory, some others may be recommended, some others may be optional, and then you may have some fields that are maybe domain specific. Again, with the same data set, we try to build different profiles, first dividing the items in these four classes, and then measuring for each of these set of information how many records were compliant with, for example, with the mandatory information. We can say that in this collection, 100% of the records had the completeness of the mandatory items between 0.6 and 0.7. Then you can also associate different weights to different types of records. So this was done as a first attempt. And as I said, in this case, you just need some statistics. So just count how many records you have, what is the proportion of field information, maybe define the weights to associate to different types of metadata, but you don't need to further process the content of the fields if you just stick to completeness. But then later we tried something different and more complex to look at another dimension, which is accuracy. Accuracy is usually listed as one of the most important dimensions to check to make sure that metadata has a high quality. It has been defined. So Bruce and Hillman, they claim that metadata should be accurate in the way that it describes an object. The information needs to be correct and factual. In this case, we wanted to check accuracy using natural language processing, so techniques to automatically process text. So we focused on the DC description field, that is the field where you have to, as I said, to provide the description of an item. So our goal was to explore possibilities and techniques to automatically assess if the description present in a record is of low or high quality using natural language processing. Usually when you write the description in a record, there are some guidelines that a cataloger should follow. For example, we focused on an Italian repository, and there are some guidelines provided by Istituto Centrale per il Catalogo e la Documentazione, where they say exactly what should be present in a good description. Should be both the object typology and shape should be described, possibly looking at the control vocabularies provided by the Institute, so taking these vocabularies into account in order to limit the variability of the descriptions. And then you should also describe the subject, for example, in case of a painting, who is in the depicted scene, and give some details on that. So as you can see, these are guidelines that are, however, rather free, rather high level. So there is still a certain amount of subjectivity when a cataloger then has to really write something describing describing an object. I reported here two examples of descriptions. They are both in Italian, but maybe you can I can summarize the content. So this is an example of a good description because well, it's concise and it includes exactly what I was mentioning before. So first, a brief introduction of how the frame looks like, and then who is the person portrayed in the in the painting, and then who appears also in this painting, and then finally a brief repetition of who is the character depicted. So you have there all the information required by the guidelines, and only that, so no more than what is recommended. This is instead another example of description that we found, that is that we judged as being of low quality. On the one hand, it's true that it's long, so it contains a lot of details, so it may seem that it's very good to have all this amount of information. But instead, you have much more than required by the guidelines, and also information that probably should go in some other fields of the record. So that's why and that it does not focus on the object and the subject. So that's why we would say that this is of low quality. So the goal of this study is to develop tools that, given these two descriptions, can say for the first case, this is good, this is of high quality, and for the second case, this is not so good, this is worse than the other. So basically, we have been working around the three main research questions that I will try to address in the following slides. So the first, as I said, the main one is if it's possible to effectively use the natural language processing and machine learning to assess the quality of cultural heritage descriptions, as we find them in the metadata records. Then what is the impact of the domain when we use these automatic methods? Because we will see in main collections, the records are grouped into domains. And these automatic techniques can have different behaviors going from one domain to the other. So if these characteristics are well captured also by automatic techniques. And then the third case, since we will rely on supervised learning, so machine learning, meaning that first we have to annotate a good amount of descriptions so that our system can learn a model and distinguish between good and bad descriptions, how many annotated instances we would need to have a classifier that is good enough. So as a suggestion and a guide for people who want to replicate our work or maybe apply what we have developed to their records. So we started, as I said, we apply supervised learning, and the idea is first we have to develop a data set that is large enough with examples of good and bad descriptions. We focus on the Italian Digital Library Cultura Italia, which is an aggregator of different repositories that then provides data to Europeana. It contains millions of records, but using then the DC description element from Dublin Core, we were able to retrieve 110,000 descriptions. Since the records, as I said, are divided into domains, also our descriptions are divided into visual artworks, archaeology, and architecture. Then these descriptions have been labeled as high quality or low quality by a domain expert, who is Matteo Lorenzini, the PhD student working at this. I mean, it may sound strange that one person was able to annotate more than 100,000 descriptions. Indeed, this was done semi-automatically, and the fact that Matteo worked before also directly to contribute to Cultura Italia was very important, because he knew very well the data, and for example, he was able to recognize as high quality or low quality some collections that he knew were provided, for example, provided long time ago, where quality check was not an issue. And so he knew that some batches of descriptions were generally not very good, whereas the more recent repositories included in Cultura Italia were better. So just checking some samples of descriptions then allowed him to not to revise manually more than 100,000 descriptions, but to work in a semi-automatic way. But in the end, and what he got was very, very accurate. So had manual quality. So we have a reliable set of descriptions labeled as high quality or low quality. And you can see here how the data are divided. So visual artworks is the domain that has the most labeled descriptions, so 60,000. Then archaeology, and then architecture is the smallest set. And you can see that it's good also that these data are rather balanced. So there are more high quality records than low quality ones, but more or less the two classes are balanced, which is very important when you use supervised approaches because it helps the classifier learn equally well the characteristics of high quality and of low quality descriptions. Just an overview of how supervised classification works, maybe for those who don't know it very well. So usually you first start from a model that is the one that we decided at the beginning. So for example, to distinguish between these two classes, good and bad descriptions. And then there is an annotation phase where usually domain expert manually collects a large amount of examples being annotated in our case as good or bad. Then there are algorithms, supervised algorithms that use this annotated data to train a so-called model, so to understand how this good and bad descriptions look like. And then this model is able to assign a label to a test set, so to unseen descriptions, and to judge them as good or bad based on what the algorithm learned from the training examples. This test set, this classification is then evaluated, and in case it's very bad, it might be that the data are revised or the model, and then that we start again the cycle. So the key parts for us are the train and the test. We can use different algorithms for training. In our case, we decided to compare two frameworks that use two rather standard algorithms that are not deep learning ones. So we first test support vector machine, and in the other experiment, logistic regression. But there is a difference. We compared two frameworks. The first framework, first the descriptions were converted into features using word embeddings. So this is probably one of the most recent advances for those working with natural language processing. So now you don't explicitly tell to your classifier which features of the text the classifier should take into account, but you just represent strings as these word embeddings, so vectors of features that are words or subparts of words. And then the algorithms learn by itself what is inside these texts and how they should be represented, and learns which are the characteristics of the text that are most relevant to perform a certain type of classification. We did the same, so we converted our descriptions both in the training set and in the test set into word embeddings. But the main difference between the two frameworks that we compared is that in the first case, we first created a language model starting from the Italian Wikipedia, meaning usually to create these embeddings, you start from a generic representation of the language. In this case, the generic representation that we consider was Italian Wikipedia. So all the content that was inside Italian Wikipedia was used to represent the Italian language. We created using FastText, so it's the Facebook tool to create word embeddings, our language model. And starting from them, then we mapped both our training set and our test set. We chose FastText because it represents not only single words, but also subparts of the words. So that, for example, if you don't have some words in your language model, then you can look at strings of characters and maybe recognize prefixes so that the meaning of a word is not completely lost. Somehow you can retrieve some information related to the words, even they are not, even if they are not in the language model. So in this first case, the important thing is that we start from the knowledge, the representation of Italian present in Wikipedia. The second framework is a bit different because we don't start from Wikipedia, but we create our embeddings from scratch using only the training set, only the domain data. In the first case with Wikipedia, of course, we get a language model that is bigger and more complete, but also more generic, because in Wikipedia you have you cover different domains, any kind of content. Whereas if we create the embeddings only considering our domain data, the knowledge that we encode is more domain specific. But usually language models that are smaller do not perform so well. So we were interested also in seeing which of the two frameworks is better for our classification task. Then the rest is the same. The embeddings of the training set are used to create a model that is then applied to a test set, and the model labels the different descriptions represented as embeddings from the test set as being of high quality or low quality. As I said, we don't explicitly code anything, so the models should learn which words are relevant in which forms to correspond to a high quality description or not. These are the results. So as you can see, for the three domains, in all domains, the results are rather consistent. So meaning that the fact that the domains are different, or the dimensions, or the number of training instances in the training set is different, does not affect very much the results. So in all the three cases, we obtain the best results using only the in-domain embeddings. In this case, the generic knowledge provided or encoded in Wikipedia is probably too much and too generic. It's better to have less data, but more consistent with the domain. We also compared our results with the baseline, because at the beginning we wondered, well, maybe the low quality descriptions are those that are very short, one, two words. In that case, it would be very easy to discriminate between the bad and the good ones. So we also trained the classifier using as a single feature just the length of the descriptions. And we can see that in the case of architecture, for example, the results obtained with just this baseline using length information is quite good, so 0.75 accuracy, whereas for visual artworks it's much lower. It means that probably it's true that for the architecture domain, shorter descriptions tend to be of low quality and longer ones tend to be of high quality, but this does not hold for visual artworks, where we find more frequently examples like the one that I showed at the beginning, where you have lengthy descriptions that nevertheless are too rich in information that are not relevant, and that probably should go into other fields of the metadata. We also tried another experiment. As I said, we were also interested to compare information encoded for the different domains. So we wonder what happens if we train our data only on the archaeology and architecture domain and use it to test descriptions related to visual artworks. We see that there is a difference. And it seems that archaeology and architecture are more similar concerning the description with respect to visual artworks, because when we test visual artworks in information, we in isolation, we got the lowest accuracy. This is probably also due to the fact that Visual Artworks has the largest training set. So when we use it, we have better results also for this reason. But we can see that there are differences among the domains, so probably it's not the best option to consider them all together, but it's better to discriminate among them, because the information that you use to judge descriptions as high quality or low quality seem to be domain dependent. Another thing that we wanted to investigate is the amount of training instances that I need to have a good classification performance. As I said, we were lucky because we knew which repositories were generally of low quality or of high quality, and so it was not so difficult to collect enough training data. But let's say in a new scenario where we don't know anything about the records that we have to judge, how many instances should we manually check? And we can see that this is, in this case, we repeat the same experiment, the same classification experiment, by increasing every time the number of training examples. And we observe that just with 20,000 examples, so one fifth of our final data set, we already obtain accuracy that is above 80. So probably it's true that the more data, the better, but we can also start from a smaller amount and still obtain good results. So we learned several things from these experiments that, as I say, they are still still ongoing. So the first finding is the one that I mentioned before. So the fact that there are really differences among domains, and using only in-domain data yields much better results than cross-domain setting. And the second finding is that domain expertise is really necessary to create training data. For other experiments, when working with linguistic data, it's very common to use platforms like Amazon Mechanical Turk to collect judgments or annotations from workers that are not necessarily qualified. For this kind of task, I would say this is impossible, because we really need a person who knows the guidelines and is able to check if the content of the description matches with this guideline, which is not trivial. Probably the most interesting part is that we observed that explicitly modeling external knowledge was not needed to yield good results. So we got accuracy above 90, just providing word embeddings to the classifier. So just information about which words are in the description. Probably the classifier was able to internally understand which words are more relevant and implicitly understand which ones, for example, come from controlled vocabularies, even if these controlled vocabularies are not provided to the classifier, which is, I think, an interesting finding. And probably using Wikipedia language model would add noise rather than useful information for the classifier. And that's why the setting without this larger language model was the best one. And then looking at errors, where there are, in some cases, since this, the information that the classifier uses is not explicitly coded, is not so easy to understand why the classifier fails in some cases. But there are some mistakes that were recognized. For example, the fact that Greek terms are descriptions containing Latin and Greek terms are usually misclassified because they are not represented in our language model. As I said, fast text embeddings also consider substrings of a word, so sequences of characters. But in case of Greek terms, you really have a completely different alphabet. And so probably the classifier is not able to represent in any way these words. And so this leads the classifier into error. So a few conclusions. The first question about whether it is possible to effectively use NLP and machine learning to assess the quality of cultural heritage descriptions, I would say that is possible, at least for the collection that we checked. We worked on Italian and on this aggregator, and it seems that for the moment it's an approach that is effective. But of course, we would need to test it on other repositories and maybe other languages to see if this finding holds. The second question, what is the impact of the domain? We saw that it's very relevant. Each domain is described with its own word vocabulary and also its own style of description. So we've seen that for archaeology, shorter descriptions are a proxy for lower quality descriptions, whereas for visual artworks, the difference is not so clear. So it's better to divide the domains and also to have experts evaluate and label the data who know the differences among these domains. And then the question about how many annotated instances, we just wanted to give some guidance in case someone wants to create this training data from scratch, and we saw that already with 20,000 descriptions, we can still yield good accuracy for our classification task. There are several future challenges. As I said, our findings are limited to Cultura Italia. We still have to test it on other repositories. But the fact that we don't apply any particular linguistic processing to the data, we just convert them into word embeddings, makes this approach, not language independent, but it can be easily applied to different languages, all the languages that have at least a Wikipedia, are represented in Wikipedia, because if we want to reuse that language model, then it's quite easy. The code to create these word embeddings is freely available, so potentially for several languages we could test these, also comparing performance on different languages. So concerning the algorithms, as I said, our evaluation focused more on Wikipedia versus domain-specific embeddings. We didn't work much on comparing classification algorithms, but and we didn't use deep learning algorithms. But of course, this is now the state of the art for many natural language processing tasks. So the next steps could also concern trying some of these algorithms to see if we can achieve better results. Although having an accuracy above 90 is still quite good. And then the very next step, which is probably the most challenging one, is now that we have some evaluation for accuracy, it would be nice to look at other dimensions among the parameters that I mentioned at the beginning. So we looked at completeness, which we were able to deal completely with statistical methods. Accuracy, it was tackled with natural language processing. Other dimensions, for example, logical consistency, probably would need a combination of natural language processing, information extraction, and reasoning or some semantic web technology, because it would need, for example, to compare different information that are present in a record and check if they are consistent with each other. So this is probably the next step in our work. With this, I conclude my presentation, and thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for your presentation. It was very interesting indeed. Are there any questions from the audience? So we have enough time for discussion. I mean, if not, I have a question, and maybe people can think about what they could ask. I mean, I'm not an expert at all of natural language processing, neither of machine learning. But so, for instance, some are more really, let's say, basic question, I would say. So concerning, for instance, the interaction with ontology and with metadata, because I'm looking, I mean, at these techniques from an ontology modeling point of view. I mean, do you think that, for instance, you could also extract some knowledge out of the deep learning algorithm in the sense of, for instance, like ontology learning?
Well, the ontological part would come into play for the next step. So the one where we wanted to check, for example, logical consistency, because maybe in that case, we should also check the compliance with the underlying model, for example. Whereas working on descriptions, we organize the work so that it's independent from the profile. So provided that you have textual data and that somehow an expert can tell you if these data are of high quality or low quality, it's more or less independent from the schema or from the, if you use ontological information.
Yeah, what I was thinking, it's really something like ontology learning in the sense that given, the analysis of the data that you do, I mean, you can extract the model actually from for the data. You extract the ontology from the analysis.
This would be possible. As I said, one of the limitations of these approaches is that you don't explicitly code any type of information telling it to the classifier this is more relevant or take this control vocabulary into account. And so it's also more difficult to understand what is taken into account when taking a decision and classifying the data. But it would be nice starting from that to, for example, to see if the set of descriptions that have been deemed of high quality have something in common, and from there trying to see if they match for example, an ontology or the control vocabulary, so to make some kind of reverse engineering and to understand if from that we can distill some useful information.
I see. And a last question, and then I see that there is also another one. I mean, at the beginning, when you talk of the metadata, you did a classification between a mandatory metadata or something else, right? And this classification was done in statistical term, right? If I properly understood.
The analysis, the division into mandatory or recommended or domain specific, it was something that was done by us.
Ah, okay.
Just to see if we can provide some useful information about the completeness that is more fine-grained than just saying this record is complete and this is not complete. Okay. Because we thought maybe a curator wanted to know concerning a collection. So it's more important to him or to her know if all the mandatory information is there and not just mix everything. Mm. Also because we observe that in most cases the optional ones are missing. So if you put together the optional and the mandatory, you don't get really useful information. So it's better to divide the two different types.
And did you have like any specific criteria for doing this classification between, for instance, mandatory or optional?
Well, in some cases, the division is defined by the metadata profile that tells you these fields are must be there and these others are not. We thought that they can also, I mean, this division it should also be flexible. So if I have in my domain, I know that certain fields are important, even if by the profile they are defined as optional. I should be able to say, give a higher weight to this specific set of information. This was our proposal. It's not a standard, let's say. Right. It's how we meant it could be useful to measure completeness.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that there is one question from the audience. George?
Yes, do you hear me?
Yes, we hear.
Okay, thank you. I have several questions. I won't have the time to ask them all orally, so I will use the Google Doc. But
okay. We have time.
Do you think that your work, that was very interesting to present, can give as a result some recommendations to write descriptions? For me, descriptions are somehow a mid-level between metadata and full text for searching, for instance. So maybe this is a result that can be done. I won't talk about some kind of semi-automatic tool, but some recommendations can be useful for everyone. This is my first question. Second question, you talk about the balance between best and low quality, and I thought about the way to analyze different kind of materials. You talk about architecture, visual artwork, different disciplines. What about the time spent that can be different between those disciplines? Third question, are there other domains that interest you besides visual artwork, architecture, and archaeology? Fourth question, about the difference, between cross domains and domain in speciality, are there differences between periods? I think about, for instance, early modern periods that I know a bit more than other ones. There are more, exchanges between disciplines. And we know that today, interdisciplinarity is very important. So is it something that can change the way you think about your work, which leads me to, I finish with this. The fact that you talk about maybe changing some criterions like accuracy making additions between disciplinaries a way to give more richness to your work. Domains in speciality, this is one task, but thinking about the complexity of the world and the links between different disciplinaries at the same time, maybe this is the next frontier. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I remember all the all the questions. So the first about giving guidance. I think that we also started from these guidelines that were given. So there is usually a standard or some instructions where you defined what you should find in each metadata field. These guidelines are already there and have been manually written. In our case, we saw that the problem was that they were too high level. So maybe starting from then, we could indeed extract some more specific information about what is there and what is not there in a description. Or we imagined, for example, to use this approach when you want to include a new repository in a portal like Cultura Italia. A small museum provides its metadata, and you can in 1 minute tell this collection of records has a good completeness, has these characteristics, and in general descriptions are okay. so that I can include them without checking again. Whereas for another collection, I can say completeness is good only of mandatory fields, and descriptions are not so good. And maybe I can point to the ones that for my classifier were the worst, because usually you also get confidence. So for those that the classifier is very confident that they are of low quality, I can give it back to a curator that can check manually, and then and then see if they need to be integrated or improved. So we imagined our system as something between a tool to collect many metadata records and a curator that at the moment has to check manually when new data are included. And concerning recommendations, as I said, we can do some reverse engineering. So looking at the good quality and the low quality records, try to understand what are the characteristics that they share, taking into account that, as I said, at the moment, they are not explicitly encoded. And so we don't really know why classifier takes this decision. This is probably the main limitation of this approach. But of course, we could take, for example, the control vocabularies for this domain, and for each description return which of these terms are present. And in case none of these terms have been used, to send it back to the curator for a check, for example. I think I remember the last question about the domain and the disciplines. This kind of work, I think, is a mix of different expertise. As I said, I come from the technical side, and I see a lot of projects for cultural heritage where the teams are made up only by computer scientists, and in general these approaches show that they are not so useful, because if you don't know the domain, you cannot say much, or you can bring much to this kind of research. So in our case, it was really very, very important that Matteo had worked before contributed to these repositories and knew very well both the domains, the guidelines, the formats, how to retrieve data, and also was able to judge what was good for a domain or not. Of course, this is also part of the subjectivity of a person, a contribution that cannot be captured automatically. So we have to trust the expert. And on the other hand, you need to have rigorous ways to apply these algorithms to this data. So it's, I think, a clear example of a work where you really need expertise coming from different disciplines. And it's impossible that just one person can do everything. And if you want to work on more domain-specific repositories, like one with older documents, the more you focus on domains, the more you need expertise on this specific domain. So to extend the work, I would say the algorithmic park is more or less as is, and this is complete. To work with different repositories and domains, we would need new people that are experts in cultural heritage. Then other questions? Can you remind me?
Well, maybe I'll write all the questions. It will be easier, yeah. And they will give me more time to other people. And so if you are kind enough to discuss with me on the back, it will be, I think, maybe better.
Of course.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. If there are any other remarks or comments to Sarah, please feel free to add anything you like. Okay, if not, then I would like again to thank you, Sarah, for your very interesting talk. And I mean, the document is there, so if anyone wants to add anything, please do that.